Beer to the GM on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Floyd and I still can't get over this Vandy hiring. I mean, we're still during the break talking about it. I'm over it. So yesterday, Floyd accused me of something incorrectly, I might add. Floyd accused me of something yesterday as we are live at Bridgestone Arena, Preds and Ottawa tonight right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Do you remember what you accused me of yesterday?
No, not that I was wrong. Anything I accused you of was absolutely true.
So
I know
before
that.
Even knowing what it was, you're going to say it was true
absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
You said that I never give Mike Vrabel credit.
Ah, I do remember.
When they win, and that I only blame him when they lose.
And not just Mike, but coaches in general. I mean, you don't like coaches in general.
Oh, that's so not true.
And I think it's a perfect example. Whenever they lose, the first thing you go to is the coach.
Did we blame Laviolette for losing in the playoffs last year?
First thing you go to. When they win, you never mention them.
Did we at all blame Peter Laviolette for the Predators?
Derrick Henry, Marcus, the offensive line, the linebacker, everybody's fine. But coaches, you didn't do anything.
I don't blame Mike Zimmer for losing yesterday, although I did not like the decision to go for it on fourth and goal down there. But I don't blame Mike Zimmer for the loss.
Zimmer's not here. If Zimmer was coaching here, you'd catch hell today.
So I thought about this yesterday. In fact, there were three games in which totally debunk your theory. I gave Vrabel credit after the Houston win. I gave credit after the Philadelphia win.
The first Houston?
Yes.
This year? I spent the entire time going over what a great job they did.
Okay.
You had no choice.
And then the Philadelphia win, I gave Vrabel credit for that.
I don't remember that.
I remember saying that I didn't think they'd be 3-1 or win a game like that if Mike Mularkey was their coach.
Yeah.
And then I gave him credit after the New England win because I thought it was his game plan. That I gave him credit for. In fact, I didn't even blame him after the Bills loss. Now, I blamed him of every loss subsequent to that.
Do you blame
him? But I did not blame him for the Bills loss. I think Vrabel's doing an okay job. Not a good job. Not a bad job. I think he's got the potential to be a good coach. I don't think he's there yet. But Marcus, apparently, is all in on the coaching. And it starts with Vrabel.
It seems like an incredibly resilient group. Where does that come from? Where does that start?
Well, it starts with the coaching staff. I think Coach Vrabel laid it out when he first got here. He wants tough guys that are dedicated to this team. And from there, it just kind of trickled down to everybody in the locker room. And guys buy into it, and you're able to really build a team around that.
Okay, and then he took it a step further when he was asked about the quarterback room and was asked about the quarterback coach and the offensive coordinator.
They've made me so much better. It's a privilege to work with these guys. Matt, from fundamentals to Pat, just, you know, talking about, you know, taking it one play at a time, focusing on how every single play is going to be different. And you've got to understand when the journey's in or when you can go out there and make a play.
That was from Monday Night Live with Mike Vrabel yesterday. What Marcus said about the coaching staff, does that prove that Vrabel deserves credit for how the Titans have played this year, even though the record's only 7-6?
Well, I mean, my whole thing with the coaches is always the same. If they get blamed when they lose, then they get credit when they win. If you don't think anything about it, if there's in your mind not anything major one way or the other, either in the win or the loss, then you don't talk about them at all. You talk about the players, or you talk about the whatever it is that, you know, whatever, throwing it to the guy in Philadelphia for first down. I mean, I never heard you rant and rave about what a great decision that was.
Because I thought it was a bad decision.
On the 4th-and-2? When they threw it to Lewis for the first time?
Well, I thought that was a good decision to give it to him.
No, see, this is what I'm saying.
But I thought it was a bad decision
to
go for it. The only
time the only thing you base it on is if it works. If it works, it was a good decision. Oh, I thought that was a good decision. Well, sure, everybody does. Why? Because it worked. 4th-and-1, it didn't work. Oh, what a bad decision. Why was it a bad decision? Because it didn't work. Oh, okay. I mean, but that's not why, how you make the decision on whether or not it was a good call.
See, I think I look at it in lifetime, and I say on those certain things, you know, I stand with it or stand against it, and I stay by that no matter what. Like, the fourth down going for it in the Texans game, I was okay with that decision. I have no problem with the fact that Vrabel wanted to go for that in the Texan game. I had a problem with the fact that it involved Luke Stocker getting a handoff. That was my problem. The decision to go for it, I'm okay with that. But the fact that they handed the ball off to Luke Stocker, that's my problem. And that's something that gets highlighted when you lose, when that play, you know, goes back to the loss. You know, I didn't even really – I don't think I got on Vrabel that much when they lost 21-0 to Baltimore until you said that if you give up 11 sacks, obviously you're not adjusting and you're not doing anything. And I'm like, okay, yeah, that's a good point. The Charger game, had they kicked the extra point and gone to overtime and lost to the Chargers in overtime, I would have said that I agreed with the decision to kick the extra point. I did not like going for two. And when they got it, I remember I turned to my dad before the drive. We're at the game in London. And I turned to him and I said, so help me God, if they score a touchdown and he goes for two. I know he's thinking it. Do not do that, Mike. And then when he did it, I said, God, I hate this decision, but I hope, you know, like, I hate this decision, but maybe it'll be the best of a bad situation. They'll get it and they'll win the game. And then they did. You know, like, that's the... I hated that. And so I get mad when the coaching, I think, is subpar. And I do give credit when I think the coaches do a good job.
You do that. It's based on only one thing. Does it work or not?
No.
Yes.
Ian, is that fair? Because I do disagree. In lifetime, I live tweet during the game my opinion on all things as the game's going on. And I get on the coaches and I get off of the coaches and I, like, I first guess. I don't second guess. Ian, back me up on this one.
You do have a lot of flaming hot takes, I suppose, on the Twitter.
You're a nice guy, Ian.
But I stand by them. Oh, yeah. I mean, look, I'm not going to agree with everything Vrabel does.
I first guess.
But then he does something stupid like the Charger game, and I have to get on him. And I guess I'm the only one that's going to get on him. So I think Vrabel's doing an okay job. He's not doing a great job. He's not doing an awful job. He's doing an okay job. I wouldn't be thankful for him like you were on Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah. He's our coach, and I'm glad he is.
Why?
He's going to be a good coach. He's a good coach. He's working on it.
What tells you he's a good coach?
He beat our arch rival with the fifth and sixth tackle and no quarterback and no anything, for one.
He went to Buffalo
he
and
just
lost
coached,
everybody.
He just coached his running back to go for 238 yards for two.
You mean after they spent the whole season not playing that running back?
They played him all the whole every game.
Six carries.
And he just went for 238 yards.
Nine carries.
So I'd say
four
that's
carries.
Outstanding work.
They were not giving him the ball
got
enough.
The offensive
that is a
line,
coaching
got
problem.
Got the offensive line to play. So, I mean, this are all got the long ball to Taylor. All those things. There's a zillion things.
He is not – they were not giving Derrick Henry the ball. And I begged on this show for them to give Derrick Henry the ball. That you have to agree with me.
No, I don't have to agree with anything that you say.
I've been saying let the big dog eat.
Oh, you say that every week.
Years.
You say that every week.
And they finally gave him the football, and
no,
he runs for 238 yards.
You can't say that every week, and then he runs for 238 yards. Well, I told you so. I mean, that's
give him
that
the
is
ball.
Not meaningful.
Give him the ball more than three times, but you want to send Derrick Henry to the bench if he doesn't gain 15 yards on his first carry, and you just want to sit him down for the rest of the game.
No, I would really just settle on, you know, four or five. Yeah, I'd be thrilled.
That's just my thing on the coach. 615-737-1025 is we're live out here at Bridgestone Arena. Preds and Ottawa tonight. Marcus has somebody's back, and I could not agree more with the quarterback of the Titans. We'll get to that next. It's a college football thought, by the way. We'll get to that coming up next. We'll also get some college football thoughts in there as well before we get to Trevor. It's Jared the GM on ESPN 102.5 The Game, and we're streaming on the Game Nashville app.
Did you get a chance to watch the Heisman ceremony?
I did. It was awesome for Kyler. It was a little disappointing, slightly biased, but I think every single one of those guys that were there were more than deserving. Tua, for me, it's pretty crazy. I mean, I've known that kid since he was 8 years old, so to see him stand up on the stage just to talk about his life, it's been really cool.
Marcus knows it. Tua got robbed of the Heisman, and that is maybe the most I have ever seen Marcus upset about something in the 4 years that I've been here and that Marcus has been here. I mean, again, go back to that clip, and, you know, he does his typical Marcus talk, you know, everything politically correct, congratulations to Kyler, but, and then he stops himself. Go back to the Marcus clip.
Did you get a chance to watch the Heisman ceremony?
I did. It was awesome for Kyler. It was a little disappointing, slightly biased, but I think every single one of those guys that were there.
Okay, and then he goes back to Marcus talk. So he, Marcus talk at the start, you know, but a little disappointing. I'm kind of biased. Marcus knows Tua got robbed. And I can't believe you, a Nick Saban man, is not on the Tua train. Marcus knows it. I know it.
I am on the best player's train.
And he is the best player in the country.
And Murray was the best player in the country.
Tua is better than Murray.
No. Tua only plays half the time. You can't be the best if you only play half the time.
He only came out on one game hurt. That was the SEC title game.
I don't care.
The other ones he came out because they were blowing everybody else.
I saw him carried out 3 or 4 games.
And he came back in.
Oh, he may have, but he left for a quarter or whatever it was. I mean, you can't be the best player in the country. If Derrick Henry was the best player in the country. You remember how many times he carried the ball in games?
Well, I was undisputed how good Derrick Henry was.
I mean, 35, 40 times a game. I mean, he's going up and down the field like a juggernaut. So, I mean, in my mind, it's just really, really hard. And there were some games that they were so far ahead at halftime. I understand all that. But in my mind, still, it's hard to be the best in the country.
But now you're encouraging Nick Saban next year to leave him in. You're encouraging Saban to say, you know what, beat him by 800.
You know what? I heard somebody saying today, maybe Marcus said it. I can't remember who it was. If those two guys were on separate years, not having to play against each other, they'd both be Heisman Trophy winners.
Over some of these years, guys have won Heismans?
Two of them still end up being a Heisman Trophy winner.
Like over.
Know, before it's all said and done.
I mean, like Baker Mayfield last year, both these guys would have won it over Baker Mayfield. Both these guys would have won it over Eric Crouch. Both these guys they would have won it over a lot of these guys that have won Heismans. Yeah. But I just think that Tua was the best player in the country, and I am thankful that a great quarterback and a former Heisman, Marcus Mariota, agrees with me. Do you think
he didn't agree with you?
You can tell he thought that Tua should have won it.
I don't care what you think you can tell. I could tell. He didn't say, did he say Tua should have won it?
He stopped himself short of
that. Then how do you know what he was going to say?
Because he wanted to say it, but the Marcus talk inside of him would not allow him to say that he was against it.
You can't say that. None of that. If you're basing this whole argument off of that, I mean, I don't know what I'm talking about. I don't even know who I'm talking to. That can't be an argument.
He said he was disappointed.
It can't be an argument. When you say, well, I thought he meant.
He said he was disappointed.
Tell me the words. Let me see the
disappointed
words.
Disappointed because he thought Tua should have won.
No.
That's why he was disappointed. Let's go back to your phone. 615-737-1025. Don is up next on the Titans. Thank you for calling. What's up, Don?
Jared, how you doing, GM? How you doing? Jared,
we're doing great.
I want to thank you, Jared. I want to thank you. If nobody else don't thank you, Jared, I want to thank you because there's one thing that I can depend on is that you will pick the wrong team. And I'm just glad about it, Jared. I want you to keep the work up for me, man. Because when I called you last week and you told me, you said, You want, you like the tank, but you're just scared about it. I knew to go in and put everything I had on the tank. And Jared, I just need you to do it for me about five more times, and I'll be able to pay off my house.
In all seriousness, I mean, what kind of scratch are we talking? You got put on the Titans, big time scratch or little time scratch or medium time scratch? I mean, what are we talking about?
We putting some cash out there. Jared, when you pick a team and you feel it, I got to go the other direction. And when I go the other direction, I'm in good shape, baby. I just want you to continue to feel it.
Don, I think, and I appreciate your call.
At least you're making somebody money.
Well, I, you know, I thought about this a little bit today. And, I mean, we haven't really moved on to the Giants yet. But I don't feel good about the Giants game. Now, I don't know what that means. I don't know. But I don't feel good about the Giants game. I'll just leave it at that. Maybe it's because I work with you. But, I mean, I am peeing my pants thinking about the New York Giants this week. And the other thing with the Titans is I always know that whenever there's, like, the opportunity is there, they always screw up some way along the way. And this would be the typical screw-up Titans game. And I get a bad feeling about the Giants, and I'll leave it at that. Lance is up next on Tua and Kyler Murray. Go ahead, Lance.
Yes, sir. I love listening to y'all's show, mainly because I'm laughing right along with Floyd about some of the comments you make. The fact that you think that that Marcus, you were understanding what he would say, you would be a good wife. That's the main thing that I can say about you. You change like the wind does. One way that in Murray, if you look at his stats, if they're not better than Tua's, they're right there with us. And he had to play every game. So I'll hang up and listen.
So the fact that his team wasn't killing other people.
Yeah, you have to be concerned now.
What's this that?
Because, I mean, I call you Sally half the time. We got a Sally rule. Now the caller's saying, and you'd make a great wife. you may be in the wrong direction here. So that's great.
Floyd said earlier today, that he doesn't think that I'm going to get married. I asked him something, and I was like, you know, so like in my house, there's a lot of bachelor elements to it, but I don't consider it to be a bachelor pad. I would like to think that my house maximizes comfort and efficiency, which is the way I like it. And I was talking to Floyd about something, and I was like, do you think the wife would let me keep that whenever I get married? And he laughed and said that he doesn't think I'm ever going to get married. And I don't know why you think that. I think I am like the number one bachelor in Nashville.
There's probably the number one reason you'll never get married.
Well, I mean, think about all the important things, right? Of like, you know, the number one bachelor. Like smart, check. Funny, check. Successful, obviously I'm beating you in six-pack picks and you were in the NFL in 40 years. Check.
That's marginal.
There you go. Hardworking, I think you'll give me that one, right?
Sure.
Check. Dedicated. Check. Compassionate. Check. Genuine. Check. I mean, I'm all of these things. Handsome. Check. Plus. So I'm all of these things. And, you know, I mean, I just saw the other day, apparently the Menendez brothers have gotten married in prison, even though they're like in solitary confinement or whatever for the rest of their lives.
Those guys that killed their parents?
Yeah. Ooh. They got married in prison to, like, women outside of prison. So if the Menendez brothers can get married, and I'm all of these things, which I'm not a serial killer unlike them, why do you think I'm never going
to
get married?
You'd like to think you got a little advantage there,
don't
you?
On the Menendez brothers?
Yeah. You just can't put your finger on it.
Not sure why, but why can't I get married if they get married?
Shoot. I don't know.
How about this? We put a bet on it.
Sure.
If I get married, you have to pay for my wedding reception.
Sure. Reception of my choice.
No.
Oh, yes.
The wife. That's part of the checks. I'm very compassionate. No. Whatever the wife wants, she's going to get.
You've already exposed yourself when you said, Do you think she's going to let me keep these two TVs? I'm keeping them anyway.
My hope is that, right there, you're done. My hope is that the
yeah.
two TVs upstairs in the TV room will be grandfathered in. You know, whoever's marrying me because she loves me, and that's the hope.
You'll be done.
Trevor Maddich going to join us next. I need an answer from Trevor on this. Why have the Vols not hired an offensive coordinator yet?
It's a good question.
What is taking so long? We will ask Trevor Maddich that next, plus everything else in college football. Jared and the GM are live from Bridgestone Arena. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game. So Vol fans are all worried, Floyd Reese.
Uh-huh.
So what happened was, you know, Tyson Helton takes the head coaching job at Western Kentucky, although it sounds to me like they wanted Tyson out of there. So they open up the offensive coordinator position. We hear a bunch of names, but it's been 2 weeks and we haven't seen any action. And not that I really care, because I feel like Pruitt needs to get an offensive coordinator who's going to do what Pruitt wants and not like some, you know, reinvent the football wheel kind of coach. But Tennessee fans every day on Twitter are all worked up about where their offensive coordinator is. I'm not that worked up by it. I think they'll find an offensive coordinator and be fine, but it leads me to ask this question. Where's their offensive coordinator? Why can't Tennessee find an offensive coordinator?
I don't know. I mean, I don't even know how many, you know, complete interviews they've had with guys.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think I know, or at least the impression I got is that they've tried to talk to a couple of guys. I'm not sure that it's worked out. And, you know, I mean, the thing that concerns me the most, the absolute most about this thing, is the head coach is going to have to be really, really committed to whoever this guy is, whoever they end up hiring. And I'm not sure I can see that. That's a concern. Because he's going to, I mean, if the best guy out there is, it's like they're talking about the guy from Okie State. Is the guy from Okie State? I mean, he's not going to come in here and run Alabama's offense now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if we want Alabama's offense, you're hiring the wrong guy. And he needs to go ahead and hire somebody who's going to do what he wants. Now, maybe he's resolved himself to the fact that, you know, maybe I need to run Okie State's offense, or I need to run a different style offense or something, but I don't sense that. I mean, still could be. I just don't sense it.
Trevor Maddich joins us now, college football analyst, ESPN. Trevor, why can't the Vols find an offensive coordinator? This seems very odd that they've gone on so long without finding somebody.
It is a little weird because as the offensive coordinator there, you've got to figure that they will eventually build a good defense to complement you. The only thing I can think of is that the kind of guy that they want isn't available, at least not on a high level. And I still don't quite know. Maybe you do. Maybe you can tell me. But I don't know exactly what Jeremy Pruitt wants to run on offense. He comes from old school Alabama and old school Florida State, where the offense complemented the defense. That was their first job. And, you know, whether or not he wants to bring in a high-flying Big 12 Oklahoma State style offense, which doesn't complement your defense, it actually gets your defense exhausted because they don't eat up enough clock, or whether he wants to go pro style, that'll affect who he would bring in, and it would affect different candidates as to whether or not they're willing to adjust their offensive philosophy to meet whatever the expectations are. So I would want to hear exactly what Pruitt's looking for.
Well, it sounded like they wanted Chip Lindsey or they wanted Hugh Freeze, and then Chip Lindsey took the Auburn job. And all of a sudden, next thing you know, Freeze takes the Liberty head coaching job, and those guys are off the board. So if that's the type of candidate they're looking for, what does that tell us?
Well, that tells us that he's going for high scoring. That tells us he's following in the footsteps of today's Nick Saban instead of the Nick Saban that was when he was a defensive coordinator there, which is to say, open it up, score a lot of points, and let the defense catch up.
You know, I wonder, Trev, and I, especially after last night, and we saw what happened with DeFilippo at Minnesota, and you wonder, can you really change? You know, if you're Pruitt and you've been raised in that Alabama, raised in that Florida, I mean, you have been that way literally your whole career. Even though mentally you think, okay, you know, maybe it'll be good for me to spread it out and do something different in the SEC. when it comes down to winning and losing and during the game, you think a guy can change that drastically?
Well, it's hard, but there are some historical facts that could give Tennessee fans hope that it could happen. One is that there used to be glaciers in Nebraska. It took a long time, but they're not there anymore. And the other is that Nick Saban, in a glacial pace, finally caught up to the rest of college football and opened up his offense as well. And I think that makes it okay for people. And being okay is important. You look at Urban Meyer, for example. When he was at Bowling Green at the University of Utah, he ran this gimmicky, funky, zone read, run the quarterback kind of offense that everybody thought was gimmicky and was only to work in the group of five, smaller teams with less talent. But you couldn't bring that stuff to the SEC because they'll hit the quarterback too hard, and in the SEC just plays big boy football, not that stuff. So in comes Urban Meyer, and not only does he win two national championships with that, he coaches Tim Tebow to the Heisman Trophy with that. And that gave that offense a lot of credibility. Then you look at what's happening in Oklahoma right now with two consecutive Heisman Trophy winners coming out of the air raid system. It wasn't that long ago when people said that Mike Leach-style air raid was just a system that quarterbacks could get empty yards and you should disregard their accomplishments in that kind of a system. But now it's not gimmicky anymore. Now it's winning Heisman trophies. People are giving it all kinds of credit. And so I think the same thing is there with – and so it's okay to run that now, I guess is what I'm saying. And so it's okay for Jeremy Pruitt to go as crazy as he wants, because other people have already blazed the trail. The only question is, what does he want to do to complement his defense? You know, it does, in my opinion, he kind of needs to go old-school pro-style Stanford, you know, pack in the tight ends, off you go, or go the opposite direction and have in your offense a whole lot of spread and a whole lot of up-tempo. I don't know that you can be successful trying to make a hybrid of those two if you don't already have superior players.
Is there somebody out there that is the old school pro style, you know, Alabama, Stanford, however you want to describe it, coordinator candidate that would be available?
You know, that's a good question, and no names come to mind.
Yeah.
And so you would think you could go to smaller colleges or the high school ranks, maybe even to bring somebody up. That's how Hugh Freeze, Gus Malzahn, some of the biggest names, Chad Morris, some of the biggest names in offensive football right now in the college level. That's where they came from. And a lot of those concepts trickled up from high school. But right now, high school is still running that stuff, and they're getting even crazier. And so if you want that old school, it's kind of hard to find them in the high school ranks or even the smaller college ranks right now. So, you know, where he would find that, I don't know. All I know is that if that's what he wants, he should stick to his guns. Because it's not just a matter of how many points you score. It's also important how many points the other side scores. Mm-hmm. And if your offense plays to the strength of a defense that can hold the score down, then you're going into that basic old school fundamental that in football you lose more games than you win. In other words, if you give the opponent enough time, he will eventually hurt himself and make a mistake that will give you the game as long as you don't reciprocate in kind. And that's one of the reasons that the old school concept of going pro style and complementing your defense works if you've got superior players. If your players don't have an advantage in talent, then that won't work for you anyway. That's one of the reasons that the up-tempo spread came into college football and spread so fast, because it allowed teams that had less talent and less power on the line of scrimmage than the Alabamas and LSUs of the world to have an advantage of their own, and that is, we're not going to out-bench press those guys, so let's outrun them. You can get smaller guys, run around, exhaust those other people. So, you know, when you talk about Hugh Freeze being a candidate, Hugh Freeze, there's nothing old school about his offensive system. He is up-tempo, modern-day college football. And, right. You know, so I can see them, you know, if he wants to go that route too, there's more than one way to get it done. And it sounds like that's kind of what he's looking for.
Trevor Maddich with his ESPN college football analyst. I mean, what do outside candidates think of Tennessee? Like, I look at Tennessee, and I still remember the proud tradition and all of that. But Tennessee has just been running coordinators in and out, and nobody has had really any success of late. Like, Bob Shoop goes to Tennessee, very heralded. He leaves town. Like, what do people think on the outside about getting the coordinator job at Tennessee under Pruitt?
I think what they think would be dictated by the size of that contract offer. There's a lot of of ills that are cured by a whole lot of guaranteed money. And ultimately, if they want the top, I mean, you're talking about coordinators right now at the top levels making $2 million a year. $2 million a year. And there's a lot of coaches that will go to Tennessee and be the offensive coordinator for $2 million. You can price some people away from where they are now that are very, very talented. So what they think of Tennessee is less important than what they think of the contract. At the same time, I think Tennessee right now would be an attractive job as long as they felt like the administration would give this coaching staff enough time to put their systems together and get some fifth-year seniors that are their own recruits. In other words, give them time to get the culture and the recruiting established. Because Tennessee, there's no reason why they can't rise back up and be competitive in the SEC East every year. Every once in a while then, they'll have a team with a lot of seniors and a quarterback who's hot, and they can compete for an SEC championship and beyond. And there's no reason they shouldn't get there. I think it's artificial that Tennessee has been depressed for as long as it's been. So I don't think ill, if I'm a top-flight offensive coordinator, Tennessee would be a team that I would find very, very attractive.
Trevor Maddich with us. Coming up next, we'll get Trevor's thoughts on Vanderbilt hiring an athletic director with zero experience in college sports. We'll also get his thoughts on how the Heisman shaked out and other things in college football. It's Jared and the GM. We are live from Bridgestone Arena right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, and we're streaming on the Game Nashville app. Jared the GM live at Bridgestone Arena. Vanderbilt today hires an athletic director who has absolutely zero experience in college sports. Now, he was president of the NBA's G League, which apparently, I guess, has expanded or has done something, or I don't even know. So I'm reading from the Tennessean article. Malcolm Turner's the guy's name, was named the G League president in 2014, oversaw extensive growth, including the addition of 10 teams, expanded TV exposure, and a lucrative deal with Gatorade to become title sponsor of the league. Floyd, how many G League games have you watched?
I have never seen one.
Well, I told you what this is like, in my opinion, right? It's like, how did Johnny Johnson build that mansion on the hill? He must be doing, well, he went to daddy to go get it. So if you're running the G League and you need some money, you go right to the NBA and ask them for the money. And so I have no idea what to make of this. Trevor Maddich joins us. No college sports experience for a Vanderbilt athletic director. What do you make of that?
Yeah, that's an obstacle you'll have to overcome. He says that he loves learning. He's a fast learner, and he'll need to be. The thing now, though, is that he'll need to decide what the priorities are. In other words, how to prioritize football especially and basketball, but especially football, to the degree of what resources go there at the expense of other places because resources are finite. The previous athletic director famously siphoned money away from the athletic department, or at least they stifled donations to the athletic department in favor of the university as a whole. And that undervalued, in my opinion, the football program. So I don't know that he needs to know and be visionary of college sports right now, so much as I need to know how important he thinks football is. Is it secondary to everything else, kind of like the previous athletic director thought, or is it something that'll be prioritized? And if that's the case, he certainly has the executive knowledge, the business and marketing knowledge to be able to bring in resources and marshal support. But first we need to know how important he wants it to be.
But how can a guy who doesn't live here, so it's not like somebody like Floyd who lives in a neighborhood with all these rich people and famous people and whatever takes over and, you know, gets one of them to build a new weight room, a guy who's never been here before, who, in my opinion, no offense to the G League, but that is irrelevant on the sports map. We're talking the SEC. How does this guy look at Derek Mason and evaluate the job he's doing as a coach when he has no idea what a college football coach does because he's never done it before?
Yeah, that's a problem. He will have to surround himself with people that he trusts that do know those things. In other words, have vertical support staff that know a whole lot about one thing, and then the other one knows a whole lot about another thing as he gets up to speed with all of it. Truthfully, I don't know how many guys there are that would be available that know all those things personally. So I'm less concerned about that and more concerned about what he values. I don't know that he'll go popping off and making big mistakes that can't be fixed. I don't think that'll happen just because of his background in business and his background in marketing. And so, yeah, it makes it harder because you've got to forge those relationships yourself from the beginning, from scratch. But at the same time, is it doable? Yeah. And it's even more doable depending on the staff that he hires and surrounds himself with.
Trev, how can you're the AD at South Carolina, any yep. place in the SEC. I mean, they can't look at a hire like this fondly, can they?
Well, I don't know that anybody worries about Vanderbilt. I think the rest of the SEC looks at Vanderbilt and they shrug and then move on.
Yeah.
You know, what is it going to be? Do you want carrots, pretzels, or celery as a side for your sandwich today, sir? And that's probably their bigger priority. I think once Vanderbilt starts to get to where they can beat them consistently, they'll start to worry about what Vanderbilt's up to. Other than that, Vanderbilt's not really a blip on the SEC, except for the fact that, the perception certainly, which I think there's a lot of truth to, that they have willingly taken all that SEC network money and other network money and not invested back into the program in good faith the way that other SEC programs have done. Look at Kentucky. Mm-hmm. Kentucky has steadily built that football program to where this year they were ranked up at the top 10, I think, at one point. And Vanderbilt could have been doing similar things, at least making the effort, at least making it seem like they were making the effort, and it seemed like just the opposite. So if I'm the SEC, I'm not worried about whether or not there's competence there right now. What I'm worried about is, again, what's the priority? What do you care about? And once I know what you care about, then I'll figure out if you're doing it right.
Trevor Maddich with us.
Trev, I think it was this week, University of Missouri gives the head coach like a 3-4-5 year extension, whatever it was, and then kind of topped the week off with bringing in the Clemson quarterback that's been out there. This will certainly be a giant plus to the program and the team and everything involved. Does this put them in a position where maybe they can contend in the SEC East?
Yeah, absolutely. They're returning almost their entire offense intact. I mean, their top two running backs, I think three of their top four receivers, most of their offensive line. This offense should be phenomenal next year. And Kelly Bryant, hopefully. I mean, Derek Dooley gets laughed at a little bit, I think, in Tennessee. Mm-hmm. But he's a very good assistant coach with a lot of NFL experience. And if he is able to coach Kelly Bryant to be a more effective passer, to be more accurate with the tools that he has, just mechanically how to be more accurate, then with his running ability, that Missouri offense will look a little bit different, but certainly it should still be able to put a lot of points on the board. And from a recruiting standpoint, the word is out, whether it's true or not, I don't know, but it certainly is what's being talked about, that Auburn wanted him to replace Jarrett Stidham, and he chose Missouri over Auburn. So if you are recruiting in that SEC footprint for Missouri, you're saying, look, we had a guy that could have gone anywhere. He came here, even though he had other SEC possibilities. He came here. And that'll make recruits listen to you. So this is really a good scenario for Missouri.
Trevor Maddich is with us. Trevor, I know you thought Kyler Murray should have won the Heisman and all that, but what do you make of voters that left Tua off the ballot? And how did that affect things?
I think voters that left Tua off the ballot, it's insane. It's just as insane that there are reports that are 10% of the voters sent in their ballots before the championship games, which is, I mean, those voters should lose their vote.
I agree.
If you're going to leave Tua off the ballot, well, maybe you truly believe that he should have been off the ballot, which I think is crazy. But if you're going to send it in before the championship games, that is disrespectful of those players you're supposed to be evaluating. So, you know, I thought Tua, actually, I had Tua fourth.
What?
Yeah.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, I did.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Thought I'd tell you that.
How between did us, you though, have two anybody. A fourth?
I had Kyler Murray number one. I had Dwayne Haskins number two. He had to do more with less, a lot more with a lot less to get to where they were.
He also did less.
No fault of Tua's. He was playing with a great defense and never had pressure up until the SEC Championship game. But in that SEC Championship game, Tua did some things, even though he was kind of hurt. What got him hurt to begin with in that game was that sack in the first drive, which to me was just – it really disappointed me that he made the decision that he made there. Really disappointed me. It was the same bad decision he made on first down in overtime in the national championship game against Georgia that he made up for by throwing that big long touchdown pass to win the game. He dropped back to pass. It wasn't a critical situation. he didn't like what he saw, so instead of throwing the ball away, he tried to make something happen, and he took a 16-yard sack in that first game. And in this one, he fell back and did the same thing.
Who'd you have fourth? On this sack, third.
So anyway, I got him fourth. So Quinnen Williams was third, who's the defensive tackle of Alabama.
No. So we don't give Tua the nod over Dwayne Haskins because Haskins had a worse team, but we give the defensive tackle at Alabama, who's got a great defense around him every year, we give that guy ahead of Tua.
Yep.
What?
Tua was well protected. He had an all-timer of a receiver core there, an offense that suited his needs, and was never in danger of losing a game in the regular season. Whereas Quinnen Williams was double-teamed often, and even when he was double-teamed, he was lighting people up. You put two guys on him, and he lit them up anyway, play after play after play. And listen, this is good, though. I'm not saying Tua's not good.
Trevor, I have never hung up on a guest in my life, and I legitimately want to hang up on you. I cannot. Fourth, yeah. Trevor.
How are you going to separate him? Okay, how would you separate
him? He's the best player in the country.
Who did you have number one?
Tua.
Okay. How did you separate Tua and Murray?
Because I think that if you put Tua on Oklahoma, they smoke every team on their schedule. I think he throws the ball better than Murray. I think he plays worse defenses week in and week out than Murray. I mean, he plays better defenses by the SEC as opposed to the Big 12. I've got to watch my mouth when I'm talking about these Big 12 defenses. And well, I feel like at the same time, like if Murray's at Alabama, Jalen Hurts can accomplish the exact same thing as Kyler Murray.
Jalen
win the same amount of games.
No. Jalen Hurts in the regular season not only could accomplish but has accomplished everything that Tua accomplished from the standpoint of winning. When it comes to, you know, they lost a game, but the point is winning the SEC championship or winning the national championship, the difference is against the elite teams, Jalen Hurts has not had up until this year anyway the arm to be able to get it done where Tua does in great abundance. But let's look at it a different way. Let's say you take Tua off of that Alabama team and put in Jalen. Would they still win the SEC? I think the answer is yes. Let's say you take Kyler Murray off of Oklahoma and put Jalen Hurts in there. What's it look like?
Oh, yes. Yes.
What's it look like?
They win. It's the Big 12.
Not like this.
They might win every game and not lose the regular season game to Texas.
But what we're talking about here is speculation, right? You got to separate these folks somehow. And the reason I had Kyler over Tua is because Tua, through no fault of his own, had a defense that was so good that he never had to perform under the pressure of losing a game if the offense bogged down in the regular season. Whereas Kyler Murray had that kind of pressure week after week after week. Now, that's not Tua's fault. But what you're talking about is hypotheticals. Well, gee, if we take Tua off of this team, we put Kyler on that team, hypothetically, what would happen then? Well, you can go that route, but I'm going with what I did see. And what I saw from Tua was a historically awesome season.
Look,
you guys can all
give...
would have run away with the Heisman in most people's vote if it weren't for Kyler Murray. But I thought that Dwayne Haskins was underappreciated this year, and I thought that Quinnen Williams was criminally ignored.
And the Williams thing may be fair, but I mean...
Good choice, Trev.
Trevor.
Well put, Trev.
Trevor Maddox, Trevor.
I love Tua. He's not. Listen, he had one of the great seasons in the history of college football. People are going to say I'm a Tua hater. I'm not. You got to separate them somehow.
Kind of are a Tua hater. Trevor, we appreciate it. As always, we'll talk next week, Trevor.
All right. Talk him down, Floyd.
I will.
Thank you. I'll just say this, and this is what I'll leave the Heisman thing up with this. You guys can go ahead and make Cam Newton league MVP like you did a couple years ago, and I'll take Tom Brady. You guys can have what's the guy with the beard with the Rockets? Harden. You guys can have Harden MVP. James Harden, Russell Westbrook gets all these triple-doubles. That's okay. I'll take LeBron, and I'll be in the finals. I'll take Tua. You guys can have – well, he had all these stats against Indiana. Against Iowa State. Okay, I'll take the guy who beats everyone he plays. I'll take Tua.
What? How many did Kyler lose?
One.
Okay.
How many did Tua lose?
Zero.
Zero.
Well,
Row. Take your how many triple doubles did Russell Westbrook have, Floyd? I don't know, 8 million.
I'll say
how many games did they win?
I will say this. This is the part of your argument that was wrong. If Tua was at Oklahoma, he might be dead because he would never be able to get the ball off with that offensive line.
They got 200 pounds.
And if Kyler was at Alabama, he would be unmolested. He would be all more numbers than Tua.
Okay, let's argue this on the other side. Let's get your call. 615-737-1025 is the number. 615-737-1025. Live from Bridgestone Arena. It's Jared and the GM on ESPN 102.5 The Game.